The break's over. It's time for me to introduce our speaker, Ted S. from Santa Clarita.
Hi, my name's Ted, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I bet. What a lovely bunch. Yeah, you guys don't take prison smoke breaks, do you? That's 5 minutes and back in. Is that how it is? You know, get a little walk on the cement over there. I am just very pleased to be here. I want to thank my hostess, our hostess, Julie. Thank you very much for your hospitality. And thank you for dinner last night. I want to thank the group for that. You guys are very generous. There have been several people from that I know who came up here to speak, and they would always comment how gracious this group is. And I just want to thank you from me and all of them. My wife and I are here, my wife of 32 years, my dog of about, let's see, January, February, 3 months. He's a little pup, and we call him Luke. He's kind of like the Luke you got over here. He's a pretty good guy, too. Just a little unruly. Thank you very much again. But I am just amazed at the destructive power in this room. You know, the state of California is so grateful that y'all are sitting in here. They didn't have to raid the Rustlers Cafe or whatever that is. Somebody told me it was a sporting house. Not that kind of sport? Oh, too bad. Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was born a half-breed Mexican from El Paso, Texas. My mother was Mexican. My father was Anglo. She was Catholic, he was Protestant, and the only candy store in town was the Catholic Church, and if you weren't Catholic, you weren't shit. I went up north to Lubbock, Texas, and I visited my Aunt Ethel. Now, my Aunt Ethel was staunch Southern Baptist hard shell, and she went to that church, and I'll tell you what, if you weren't Baptist, you weren't shit. So you could tell all of the heathens, they were the ones that were smiling. She was a lovely lady. And she would say, oh, poor darling, well, I guess it's because of the blood of her mother, his mother. And then I'd go down, my grandma Teresita would look at me, and I'm a little, you know, I'm a little wild guy, and she said, ay, pobrecito, bueno es por el sangre de su padre, which was the same thing. And I didn't know who or what I was. I went to school, and when I was going to school, I fought. I was a little scrapper. And I fought Ernest Lopez for calling me a gringo soldado. And I fought Jimmy Lockwood for calling me a Mexican greaser. And I didn't know what I was, and I went to my mom, and I said, Mom, what am I? And she said, son, you're an American. Never occurred to me I was an American, because over where I lived, you was either a gringo or you were a Mexican, you know? And she looked at me, and she said, don't be ashamed of who and what you are, for with your blood flows the blood of men who conquered a continent. And I thought, oh my goodness. So I studied up, I listened to old Hernan Cortez, who came out here with a boat and a bunch of horses and cannons, and three boats. He came, soldiers, and I mean, just really invaded Veracruz. And then he was committed, kind of like we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned about commitment from a friend of mine. He said, if you eat a breakfast of ham and eggs, You're going to find out what commitment is. The chicken is involved. The pig is committed. And I thought, okay, I guess that's nice. But let's get back to old Cortez. He was an alcoholic, you know. He truly was. Because when they landed on the coast up there, he said, okay, boys, you have shore leave. Go on. Now, everybody got off the boat, they unloaded them, and then he burned the boats. Now, that's commitment. Didn't know where the hell he was, but he burned the boats. There ain't no way to get back to where he knew he was. And you know he was an alcoholic because his first mate came to him, woke him up, and the first thing he said was, I burned a what? So that's where I learned commitment. Well, I drank a lot. I loved tequila, sal, y limón. I loved the ritual. You know, you drink a little, pour the tequila, a little sal. And it goes down, you know. Kind of like... God damn, that's good! Woo! I loved it. I loved it going down, and I loved it coming back up. I was one of them drinkers. You know, I don't want to spoil your breakfast, but I was one of those drinkers. Clay came 2 in the morning and looked, and I had to pick my nose to see what I ate the night before. Right? A little pepperoni. Corn and pepperoni. Oh, I was very, you know, I'm one of them drinkers. Anybody drank wine in here? Raise your hand if you drank wine. Oh, yes, there's only 2 kinds of wine I drink, table wine and under-the-table wine. But in the morning when you wake up or you come to and you're feeling bad, you go to the sink, you start brushing your teeth, and then all of a sudden you hit the tongue back there and you go, ugh! You vomit in the sink, and you crap all over the back wall. I was that kind of drinker. You know, alcohol leaves you no dignity. None at all. It's kind of like those shirts they give you in the hospital. You know, you look good in the front and then you turn around. Alcoholism is kind of like that. It kind of undresses you. You know, and I've been to a lot of places where people go, I tell my story and they go, ugh. They weren't the kind of drinker I was. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't make it in church. I couldn't make it in church because I couldn't stand the judgment. Man, and I was a good little altar boy. I was so good that the priest told my cousin Tommy and I to go downstairs and clean out the wine cellar. He didn't mean that kind of clean it out. We sat there and we got drunk. Oh, we got drunk. Has anybody ever tasted church wine? Church wine is so good it'll make you a priest. Man, we had it there and there was a cup and they had these big barrels and we opened up the cock spring and we filled up the cup and then we started playing church. The blood of Christ. The blood of Jesus Christ. The blood of Christ. I felt like a vampire, for Christ's sake. I loved it. Oh, my God. They finally looked for us about 4 o'clock, and we were all passed out down there. And they didn't ask us to do that again. But that's how I drank at first. Man, it was fun. It felt good. My ears got hot. You know, I went to a dance, and it was kind of like this, only a little. It was a gymnasium. and all the girls are on this side, and all the guys are on this side, and you know how far it is from there to there? About a mile and a half. But you have to go over there, and you're walking, right? And you finally look at a girl that you want to ask to dance. And everybody's dancing on the dance floor and looking around and doing their thing, right? You walk up, and just before you ask her to dance, some jerk comes in and says, "You want to dance?" He says, "Yes," gets up, and you're left there standing alone. Oh, God, what embarrassment, what humility. I walked in, and I'd walk over there, and I'd finally, my friend Richard said, "Come on, Ted, I want to give you some, make you feel good." So he handed me a bottle of Four Roses. You know what Four Roses are? I don't think they even make it anymore. I think they ran out of copper because it all went down in the bottle. You taste it and it tastes like a roll of pennies. But boy, it got you there. And I took and I drank it one more time. I go, "Damn, that's good." All of a sudden it hits me. Boom. My goodness, I could dance like Michael Jackson, man. I could do it. I could do everything. I'd dance like Michael Jackson. He wasn't even alive. Come to think of it, he still isn't. But I could dance, man. So I'll sashayed up to that girl and I went and I say, "Honey, you want to dance?" And if she said no, I'd say, "Is it my house or yours? Because you're here for something." Booze gave me something. It did something for me. I would get my paycheck and I'd go to the bar. You know, I'd cash the check. I'd go have a couple of drinks. I'd look in my pocket. God, I have money. This one's on me, boys. Oh, I was popular. I'd go home, and I honest to God knew that my rent was paid, the electric lights and the water, all that was paid when I looked at my money. That's what alcohol did for me. It was the illusion that everything was all right. I'd go home, and she'd say, "Where's the money?" I said, "I worked night and day, my fingers to the bone for that money." I remember my last drunk. My last drunk was a good one. I walked in the house, and one more time, I walked in the house about 2 o'clock, 3 in the morning, you know, whenever it's nice to walk in the house. My house. I walk in there and she says, "Oh, those words. Are there any Al-Anons in here?" "Oh, good. Then you will understand what I'm talking about." She looked at me and says, "Where you been?" And I went, "She's not going to understand. I don't know." So I say, "Just a minute." I go into the bathroom and I say, "Oh my God, 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 please get me out of this. I'll never do it again. I promise from the bottom of my heart, I'll never do it." I'm washing my hands and my face and I turn around, no towels. Oh, there isn't God. No towels in the bathroom. I come out. Where are the towels? Where are the towels in the bathroom? And before she has a chance to open her mouth, and I said, "Besides, I told you when we got married, I want a hot meal when I come home at 3 in the morning. So she looks at me, and she was a very nice woman. She looks over there and she says, "Sit down, son of a bitch." I went, "Oh my God, she must be serious." I sit down, she goes, she throws a plate in front of me. And there it is. She said, "Eat." And I look down, there's this little charcoal briquette, a glob of something that might have once been mashed potatoes and gravy, and 17 little BBs floating around in this, down at the bottom of that thing. But by goodness, it was hot. It's the little victories. It's not the big ones, the little ones. She heard me. Oh, my God, that was my life. Yes. And oh, she knows. Uh-huh. You learn now. And so all of a sudden, you know, I came home again. And there I was lying on the bed. And she was wiping off the spittle and the blood and the tar and sawdust. You know how we look when we come in off the road. And I was there. And this little bitty girl walks in. She happened to be my daughter, my little girl. She walked in. And she said, "Mommy, what's the matter with Daddy?" And my ex-wife looked at that little girl and says, "Baby, he's very, very sick." And she said two words that broke my heart into 1,000 pieces. She said, "Poor Daddy." And I just looked and I swore and I placed my soul on the throne of God that I would never drink again. Ever. Now you'd think that was enough, wouldn't you? Well, the very next night, I'm at the Dresden Room. Why? 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 God, am I just crazy? What's the matter with me? God, if there is a God, I need help. And I went home. And I was working at the American Broadcasting Company at the time. I can say it now because I'm retired. They gave me a lot of money. And I was successful thanks to y'all. I owe it to you, but you're not going to get paid. And there was a cameraman who said, "How's your drinking going, Ted?" I said, "Fine." It's always fine, isn't it? I said, "Fine." He says, "Well, let me ask you, do you black out?" "Yeah." "Do you pass out?" "Yeah." "Do you wake up in places you don't know where you are, with people you wouldn't go to lunch with?" "Yeah." "Well, you know how it is. Some of you guys are drug addicts. You know, you go down to Chewy. And Chewy's got all these pock marks on his face, man, and bumps. It looks like he's a terrible-looking person. And smells awful bad. And the first thing he says, "Hey, Chewy, how you doing?" "Man, you're looking good. Looking good, baby. You got anything?" See, you've only waited 8 hours for him. That's what my wife told me. I didn't do drugs. I was pure. I only used speed. Because you could drink more. And I attributed all of my success to alcohol. It got me a job at the American Broadcasting Company. Well, a couple of them, "Hey, there's Brandon over there, man. How you doing, Brandon?" "Hey, baby, what's happening? You standing right?" "Good." "He's standing like a ballerina. Legs all out, man. I don't know how you walk that way." We were Pidi Longos. You know, some of the guys know what Pidi Longos are, man. Soy de EPT, you say. That's El Paso, Texas. Today I thought it was extended pregnancy test or something. You know, things change. I used to have a couple of hookers before I went to work. Not that kind. Words change. Oh, I have issues. God damn, we used to say resentments, huh, Peggy? Peggy over here, she's my senior. I sobered up June the 16th, 1965, and she's in May. That's okay. I'll outweigh you. God, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love its people. You guys are so wonderful. You laugh. You love to party. My God, we know what party is. The reason I love Alkies is that we have felt the alpha and the omega of all the emotions. We've drank enough and been happy enough to where we drank and we blacked out. Blacked out. Couldn't feel any more happiness, any more joy. And the last drink, boom, and I don't know where it went. But then the same thing happened on the way back down. We were just so depressed and so forlorn and remorseful that we, you know, you give us enough pain and guess what? We black out. So we have felt all the pain there is to feel. We have felt all of the joy there is to feel. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. We run the spectrum of feelings because there isn't a chapter into feelings in this book. And there's a reason for that. I will walk up and I will ask any one of you, how you doing today, man? What's wrong? Jesus, I'd be here for 3 days. So I go up to you and I say, well, what's right? I'm out of here in 5 minutes. So this is how we act. Somebody said, my sponsor, I did finally make it to AA. And I had a sponsor. And he looked at me and he says, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, well, and he said, not right now. I want to ask you what you want to be. Next time you see me, think about it. About 2 weeks later, I come up to him and say, hey, Don, remember that question you asked me? And he said, what question? I've been thinking about this thing for 2 weeks, and you don't remember what you told me? He says, remind me. He says, well, you asked me what I wanted to be when I grow up. He says, oh, yeah, I asked that of several people. I thought, several people? You're supposed to ask only me. So I told him, I said, well, what I want to be is I want to be a gentleman. He looked at me in those sad eyes and said, well, act like one. Nobody will know the difference. You know that fake it till you make it little thing that we have around here? Well, that was Don. He disappeared about the second, third year that I was with him. And I couldn't get a hold of him, so I called his sponsor. His sponsor was a guy by the name of Chuck C. Chuck Chamberlain. And he was, a lot of you don't know who he was, but he's the guy that wrote A New Pair of Glasses. And he taught me how to love. He taught me what love really was about. He loved drunks, man. He loved them. 8 to 80, blind, crippled, or crazy. He loved them. There is miracle. There is miracle in puke. There really is. Clean up a drunk once, and you'll discover that you're cleaning yourself up. I learned who I was through drunks, through newcomers. I love the newcomer. They're the only ones who listen to my garbage. Who else? In my home group, they say, oh, there's Ted again. God. You know, I come out here and I'm a star. But that's how it works. And then they told me Jesus never did a miracle in Bethlehem. He was just Joe's kid. But man, he went to those other places and he healed everybody. You see, I discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to a mighty God. A God who is bigger than all the problems in the world. All of the problems in the world. My God's bigger than that. My God's even bigger than my personal problems. And He's in this room right this instant. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. Right now. Not after I call my sponsor, not after I go bowling, not after I go to a meeting, not after I've been struck by the lightning, but right now. How about now? And now? May you find Him now. Grab hold of that power that's in this room. You newcomers, if you don't know what's going on, and you doubt whether you belong in Alcoholics Anonymous, stop drinking and you will discover why you drink. And I will tell you right now, run! Get out of here because your drinking is ruined. No more. No more. Can't do that anymore. You mean I can't drink? Can't even smoke a little of that gangster grass? I can't suck up any of that faggot powder. Don't mean to insult anybody in here. But that's what we do, man. That's my higher power. That flip, that booze, that drink is my higher power. And Alcoholics Anonymous grabs us and we get to feeling a little better. And it cons us into discovering a God that's greater than alcohol. So what did I do? Anytime I needed a job, I'd go and say, I have to have a couple of drinks. Got to have my higher power work with me. So I drink those drinks. And then I go to the building that I'm going to go ask for a job. I walk into that building. And I just about get to this guy's office that's going to interview me, and I say, I can't interview here. He might smell the booze on my breath. So I leave. And I do it the next day. And the next day. And I am finally, I worked at UCLA Stage Management. And I was in a bar. We're at the drinking beer. And the guy says, I said, I'm looking for a job. He says, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a cameraman, I'm a projectionist, I'm a television person. He says, really? He says, I have a friend that works over at ABC. Go tell him I sent you. I go, tell him, I get the job. Who got me the job? Jim Beam. Okay? I don't know God yet. God, are you kidding me? God work in my life? Ha, you don't know. He'll work for you and y'all, this table, that. He'll work for everybody in here but me. God won't work for me, and I know there's a God, but He won't do anything for me. Why? I went too far. I denied my Christ. I denied my God. I crossed over that line. And y'all know that line. There's a line that society draws for you. I've crossed that one a long time ago. But within the heart of every alcoholic in here, there's a line that we made for ourselves. I shall never cross that line. I am a defender of the weak. And then I became a predator. I became a predator of the weak. Alcohol had taken me to the depths of hell. I could not die. That was my curse. I don't know about y'all, but I could not die. And I tried. I couldn't die. So what I do? I was in despair. Total despair. When I said, God, if there's a God, I need your help. And along came that cameraman asking me how my drinking was going. Well, I sobered up, and I pulled cables. That was my place. And I cleaned up the stage, and then they gave me stages to clean up, and I cleaned them up. I worked with all kinds of stars, big ones. It's easier for me to say who I haven't met than who I have. Worked the Academy Awards. I was there when John Wayne won his Oscar. I was there when I looked up at Willie Nelson. I said, "Willie, I'm from Texas too, man." He says, "We better stick together." I said, "Yeah, because if we don't, they'll hang us both." And he laughed. And I'll tell you what, I have stories like that forever, but that's not the success. The success came when I walked up and I sponsored a guy. And I gave him the same thing they'd given me. He walked in, just like I walked in, and said, "Man, how do you guys do this? How do you do it?" And you said, and I said, "Well, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable." He said, "Yeah." Because, you see, he had already conceded to his innermost self the first step. And then he said, okay, I've done that. Now what? Well, we came to believe that there was a power greater than ourselves, greater than Jim Beam or Four Roses. We came to believe? You mean to tell me that's why I've been coming to these meetings, so that I will be able to believe that there is a power greater than myself? Yeah, you're going to hear your story, or parts of it. Keep your eyes open. Listen for the sameness, not the differences. Listen to those samenesses. And then he says, "And then what?" And then I made the decision to do what you did. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood He could do something about my dis-ease. And not before. I made a decision to do that because you told me that He'll help you, you'll recover from your disease. You told me that. I heard my story. I didn't hear the narration of what I did, the literature. You know what I heard? I heard that inner gut screaming. You told me about your screaming memes. You told me about the craziness that you went out there. Man, how did you told me about what I had done? You wake up in a place you don't know where it is, man, but there's a bare light bulb and it's that funny green that everybody, they're all institution green. I guess there was a sale on that crap. And then you reach over and there's a warm body. And you say, "Oh God, God, please let it be a woman this time." I made a searching inventory of my stuff. She said, "We made that. We did that." Every single one of those steps is preceded by we. We. And so, wow. That's how you did it? Well, then I'm going to try and do it the same way. Thank God they wrote it down. I was one of these bar drinkers. I flit from bar to bar to bar to bar to bar. Used to drink in Juarez. And they had a strip where there was nothing but bars on one side and bars on the other side. And man, I went, I drank here. I'd go to the Manhattan Club, go across the street to the lobby, and then down. Across the street, up this way, down the Mighty Sky, up and down. Now that's what I drank, and I was a runner. And I was wondering, why did I run? This had been bothering me for quite some time. Why was I running? And it occurred to me that I was looking for my daddy. Because I like you, Rain, you couldn't tell her parents were hippies, could you? Shoot, could have named me Weed. But I was there wondering why, so I wrote it down, and I discovered that I was chasing my daddy. You see, my daddy was a drunk. My daddy was drunk, and he told a story about
this guy in a blue uniform arresting him. It was a federale. And all of a sudden he said that I came up to a sailor and I started kicking him. How come you hurt my daddy? I love my daddy. I love my mom, but I love my daddy. My daddy was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He sobered up. And this here was his group. This was his organization. I didn't know that I was going to be a part of it. See, because I hated his drinking and I was never going to be like my dad. I remember them kicking me out of a bar and saying, "Get out of here, you drunken son of a bitch, and don't you ever come back." They're not being very nice to me. And I turned around and I thought to myself, you don't talk to me that way. You talk to my dad that way, but you don't talk to me that way. But he sobered up. He sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous. He introduced me to the two guys who saved his butt. He said, "I want you to meet Bill W." We were in San Francisco. He's the one that created this organization to save you, Daddy. I said, "Hi, very nice to meet you." We were in some place in Colorado, the Springs, Colorado Springs or whatever that place is named. And they were having a little gathering very similar to this. And he said, "I'd like you to meet the two men who saved your daddy's life. This is Bill." "I remember you from San Francisco." "Yeah." "And this is Dr. Bob." I said, "Well, thank you very much for saving my daddy's life. Dad, can I have some nickels to play the pinball machine?" What did I know? What did I know where that was going to take me? I have to tell you, my wife is a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. She's got 32 years. I met her when she had 30 days, something like that. And she 13-stepped me. Took me out 3 days. Didn't touch her. Thought I was queer. Well, I don't like to use that word. A little strange. But we got together, and she was probably the most stunning, exotic, beautiful woman I ever met in my life. And we stayed together. She's an alcoholic. The one thing that she and I have going for us is that will anything separate us? Not on this earth. Not as long as we live the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's one thing that will separate us. If she gets drunk or I get drunk, it's over, baby. And I'll tell you why it's over. Because if one or both of us don't have the guts to tell the other one it's over. And we need that kind of strength to do so. And there's nothing going to get me drunk. And there's nothing going to get her drunk. So I guess I'm stuck with her. And I'm glad. She has been, I got to tell you a story. We were coming back from the convention up in Washington, Seattle. And we're coming through. We're driving through the beautiful, you know, those big, giant trees, the redwoods. We're going through them. Man, it's just wonderful. All of a sudden, I'm feeling kind of bad, feeling kind of sick. And I tell her, I said, "You know, I got to stop. We're doing quite a bit." And we stop. I jam on the brakes and all the dust comes over the top of the car. And she said, "What are you doing?" And then she thinks, he's a little dramatic. I told her, "I'm sick, baby. I'm really sick." And then I slumped over. And when I slumped over one more time, I went down that tunnel. And I came to a room, and there was a person standing there and said, "Come in, Ted. We've been waiting for you. You won. You won this race." And there was a threshold, and I put one foot over it, And I see my cousin Tommy saying, "Teddy, come on, let's go play, man. It's fun up here." I see my mother, my grandma. I see my Aunt Pepita, and I see a lot of important people that were in my life. And they said, "Come on in, son." And I crossed over, and I said, "Wait a minute. They're dead." And I backed up a little bit. And I looked up at this personage, and I said to him, the purest thing that ever came out of my heart, I said, "I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love its people. And you need a lot of help down there. They're very, very sick." And I had 25 years of sobriety at the time. And I said, "I've gotten pretty good at this AA thing. And if it's all the same to you, I'll go back and I'll help you for as long as I'm useful." And all of a sudden I feel this wind that goes like the suction. Like I don't know if you guys ever went to JCPenney when they had those vacuum money things that and I came back in and I hear this, "Come back to me, you son of a bitch. You're not going to leave me out in this goddamn wilderness all alone. Get out of there. Come on in. Ted, come back." And I look at her and say, "Friend." "Oh," I said, "why are you kissing me? I told you I was sick." She says, "I wasn't kissing you, you fool. I was giving you mouth-to-mouth resuscitation." The girl brought me back from the dead. I went to the doctor, and he gave me a pacemaker. And today I have this pacemaker and defibrillator in there. Now, what a defibrillator is kind of like the paddles. Well, I went to my chiropractor. And he put those electric things, pulled the thing apart. I said, "A little higher, because that's where I'm hurting." She put it there, and it went, kapow! And I went, "What the hell? You trying to kill me, girl? Jesus, do that." And all of a sudden, she did it. She put it back. She turned that little thing up. Beep, beep, beep. I'm starting to feel it. Kapow! And I'm on this thing laying on my stomach. And I jumped this high off that bench. I haven't had a back problem since. But that thing went off, and I'm telling you, I swear to God, man, I knew I was dead. I scared that woman so bad, she quit right there and never came back. Well, there are just some things I haven't drank, but I haven't gotten rid of all that jumping to conclusions thing. Oh, God, I love me. But that's part of my problem. That's part of my story. You guys introduced me to a mighty God. A God that answered all of my problems if I applied the principles of this program. I took a fifth step with a man, got all that stuff out. We left it there. Then I did something else. I asked him to entirely remove these defects of character. And then I wondered why he hadn't removed the anger, why he hadn't removed some of the sloth, why he hadn't removed some of my arrogance. And then I read that seven-step prayer, which says, "My Creator, I now offer myself, all myself to you, good and bad. Take away my difficulties." And then it said in there something very profound. "Remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows." That means he's not going to remove everything. That somebody's going to look at you or me and say, "God Almighty, how come he does hit that way?" Well, I go to some of these meetings and I swear to God, I've got 44 years of sobriety, right? I know I did it wrong. I didn't do it the way that they did it. I know I did it wrong. My God, why didn't they strike me drunk? Well, the reason they didn't is because I practice the principles in this program. I don't tell you about it. I don't go around bragging about how many goddamn meetings I go to. Oh, I go to so many meetings. I go to so many meetings. Well, why is your kid crying? I go to a lot of meetings. You know, I do all of these things, man. I go bowling. I do all that crap. But I don't say, God, help me. Remove this from me. When I get into a real deep depression or I get into a deep problem, like, I'll never forget what I felt like when they said, you have diabetes. I said, oh, God. And then they said, there's a cure for that. I didn't, when they said your heart, you had a heart thing, incident, which was a heart attack. And they said you can't work there anymore because you have this machine in your body. And every time you run under those dishes, there's 30,000 microwave volts that blew out my A channel. And I felt bad. Then they said you have cancer. And I thought, oh my God. Then I had some kind of thing called venal thrombosis. I don't know, some kind of a trombone thing. I had that, and I was supposed to die, septic shock. And I went up and I said, God, what's next? Boils? I was thinking of Job, you know. And I'll be and so what happened is that I got this thing. I have this. I have alcoholism. And if I have my alcoholism, I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and those alcoholics, I take care of my alcoholism, and the doctors take care of the rest of that stuff. And I said, God, what are you going to give me next, boils? I got to let you know. The other day I was under my arm, and I said, Fran, what's that? And she says, it's a big bun. It's a goddamn boil, isn't it? So, you know, he cured that too. You know, so I'm sitting there doing my little thing, and you guys have helped me. And just remember this. If they don't let a drunk into your meetings, it's not an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's not one. Go to a place, stick with the people who love the people. And I'll tell you what, you will receive a gift that is far beyond your contemplation right now. Far beyond. I discovered about something about marriage. It's an institution. That's the only thing I didn't write down. I wasn't in any institutions, and I was in the institution of marriage. I really did pass those 20 questions. And I found something out. The longer I am married to this woman that I love, and that's not to say that we don't quibble. This morning she said, get out of my way! I'm sorry I have to share the bathroom with you. And I thought, why is she following me? But the thing is that we quibble and sometimes we quarrel. But not often. And I found that what we build one another, she and I have built something that is so precious that quite often I assume that you know she's with me because she's in my heart. She's in my heart. And she's the one that has gone through all of that stuff. She's the one that went through the heart attack, the cancer, the diabetes, all the other stuff that I went through, the alcoholism. She's the one that went through it. Because I tell you what, anybody been to the hospital lately? Raise your hand. Good. You guys know something. That when you're in the hospital, they take care of you. It's the other person that suffers. Not us, man. We're just, hi, how you doing? Yeah. I remember when they said, oh my God, he's dying. I went up that tunnel again. And they said, Dramamine, Bubamine, all these D-means, man. Oh, he's back. My ears got hot, and I thought, ooh, mercy. And I said, my God, they're going to kill me. I didn't say it. But they said, give him more morphine. Do you know something? I did not say, stop. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. No drugs will hit my veins. I said, send me to Pakistan. Get me out of here. And they did, and I was just happy and a piggy and pucky. But Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me a great deal. It's taught me the greatest deal in all of the world, that if there is a God, he expresses himself through you. And there's only two words I ever heard God speak. You know what those words were? Ha ha. And I know God was in this building today because, yeah, there it is again. Boy, does he express himself beautifully, doesn't he? He's a wonderful, wonderful God, man. And so gentle because he takes me to places that I've never been and gives me the strength to do all the things I'm supposed to be doing. Oh, and I have to tell you about one more thing. If this was in the Juarez Penitentiary, right? I'm in the jail. And I don't know that I'm there yet. What do you think? How'd I get here? But I was awakened with a light mist on my face. And I knew that I was in California. I loved California. And I wanted a fresh orange. And I thought, I can reach up and grab me an orange out of this tree. And then I can put a hole in it and pour a little vodka in there and have a fresh screwdriver. Right? Well, I got through with that and I couldn't lift my head because the blood had coagulated on the cement. I tried to lift my head and I couldn't. I couldn't open my eyes because, you know, those wine boogers get real hard and you can't open your eyes too good. All them winos know that. And I finally peeked open and there's this big door. It has this metal belts on it. It has an opening about, oh, I would say a foot by 2 feet with two bars, right? I said, ooh, Toto, Toto, we are not in Kansas anymore. And so I look around, and there's a open fireplace. And I know what that fire pit's for is because they fed you the refried beans with the lard about that thick on the top and these tortillas that have green spots on them, and some of them move. Don't laugh, it's protein. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God. You see, that was the beginning of a bad day. So anyway, that was my bad day story. I just told you that because I had to fill up the time. It says, we've been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We've been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect. But we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in the cynicism over the state of the nations, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. For his sake, we do recount and almost relive the horrors of our past. But those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find we are soon overcome by them. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked. Shocked. when we burst into merriment over a seeming tragic experience out of the past, like picking our nose. But why shouldn't we laugh? I have to laugh at this sometimes, shocked. You know, when I woke up, when I came to and the mist was on my face, there was a man urinating over me. Okay, oh yeah. I'm so glad I didn't reach up for the oranges. You've been there, done that. Bought the t-shirt, now I sell them. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered. Got that? We're not recovering. We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. Thank you and have a wonderful rest of the day.